As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
At your service, it's the Garden Hotline, sponsored by Chesterfield Valley Nursery, a celebration of His beauty on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Welcome in on this rainy Saturday morning in April. I'm Scott Jagow, joined this week by Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve to talk gardening, of course, because it is the Garden Hotline, and that number is 314-436-7900. That's the number to call to ask your question of Aaron. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Scott.
How's it been going at the Shaw Nature Reserve?
It's been going well. It's a beautiful time of the year to be out at the Nature Reserve. All of the spring bloomers are up and going, and everything's green, and the earth feels alive. So it's a beautiful day.
I can imagine. You also have the wildflower market coming up. Isn't that close?
Yes, yes. It's May 2nd and May 3rd. That's a Friday and a Saturday. On May 2nd, we have the festivities occurring in the evening from 3 to 7 p.m., That is our members' night, so if you're a Missouri Botanical Garden member, that's your night to show up and shop for plants, and also we'll have a lot of other artisans both selling their art and food. And then on Saturday, that's the public event, and that runs from 9 a.m. until 1 p.m. in the afternoon. There is a small entry fee. It's $5 per person, but if you carpool, it's $10 per car. So bring your friends, carpool out there. It's a reduced rate, and it'll be a really good time.
What's special about that event for you?
I think what's special about it is a very large gathering. We have quite a few different vendors selling native plants, and it's just a really great opportunity to gather and celebrate native plants surrounded by the beauty of the nature reserve. We also have experts on hand to help people make selections, to help them design their gardens if they need that assistance. And it's very family friendly. So we have, a lot of times we'll have a group of youngsters who will help to transport plants from the sales tent to the cars. And so we really are bringing in all sorts of different people, both adults and kids, to help with this event.
What are some of the more popular wildflowers these days to plant?
Well, so it's almost always whatever is in bloom.
Okay.
So that's the selling point. But really, a lot of people love bluebells, so they search for bluebells. There's another plant called Indian Pink, or also known as Woodland Firecracker. That one is a very unique plant. It has long red tubular-shaped flowers with like a yellow star on top. Hummingbirds really like it. And so people are always on the lookout for that. And then also ferns. Native ferns are notoriously difficult to propagate. And so not very many people grow them, not very many growers grow them. And so anytime we have ferns available, then those usually are the first to go.
How in general do people, do you think, incorporate wildflowers into their gardens, their own gardens or yards?
You know, a lot of times it depends on their aesthetic. So some people love prairie plantings, and so they may want to create like a pollinator garden that's kind of wild. And maybe that's in the back of their yard, or maybe it's in the front of their yard. And so we get a lot of people who are looking for plants that draw in specifically butterflies. Butterflies are beautiful creatures, and so they're fun to watch. And other people will bring in natives just out of curiosity. And natives can be folded into a garden, a very formal garden, if they are chosen correctly. So we do have some kind of weedy natives, and then we have some very well-behaved natives. And so it's really kind of looking at what a person is really wanting to accomplish in their yard. Are they looking to draw in pollinators? Are they looking to just increase the different types of plants that they have in their garden? And then what kind of style? Is it going to be more wild, or is it going to be more formal?
Yeah, native plants, obviously, if there is a controversial subject in the gardening world these days, it's yes. definitely those, because of what you just mentioned.
Yes.
Some of them are extraordinarily beautiful.
Yes.
Also, even the ones that are beautiful can be a pain.
Yes, they can. But, you know, and that's, again, about choosing the right plant for the right place, but also just going in knowing that all plants require maintenance, even natives, and sometimes even more. And so if you have a plant, one thing I like to talk to people about is encouraging them to learn how a plant reproduces. So if it reproduces with a lot, if it produces a lot of seed, it just sets a lot of seed, like you see some of our asters doing, and then also it spreads underground as well, that plant is going to be extremely aggressive. Most likely it's going to be very aggressive. And so if you know that going in, you can choose not to plant that one and search for one that's a little less aggressive. Or you can plant that plant, but just know you might have to deadhead it, or you might have to control its spread a little. You just have to control its spread.
What about, you mentioned butterflies and attracting mm-hmm. insects.
Yeah.
Give us some thoughts on how to attract good insects, the ones you want in your garden, not necessarily the ones you don't want.
Yeah, so most people, when they think about encouraging insects in their gardens, they're thinking about bees and they're thinking about butterflies. But we have a lot of native, what are called beneficial insects, and those beneficial insects may be flies, they may be parasitic wasps, they may be different types of beetles. And all of these insects perform functions within our gardens. And a lot of times they're going after our garden pests. So think about, you've got this big, beautiful tomato plant, and then you find a tomato hornworm on it. Or you walk outside and half that tomato plant is gone, and then you find this big, fat tomato hornworm. There are insects out there that will lay their eggs on the outside of that hornworm. And then those eggs will hatch. And then those insects will basically eat the caterpillar, a hornworm, sometimes from the inside out. It's a really disgusting process.
I was going to say, it sounds
But I will
awful.
Say that it's a beautiful thing because you know that nature's working, and it's really great for kids. Kids enjoy watching that, like, that natural kind of that predator-prey relationship on that really microscopic level. And so, if you ever see a tomato hornworm and its backside is full of little white eggs, just know that's a good thing. Leave it alone, because that insect, most likely that tomato hornworm, is going to die within the next week.
Wow! And this is good for kids. Did you call them parasitic wasps?
Parasitic wasps. So yes. So parasitic wasps they're technically wasps, but they do not sting. So on their back end, they have what looks like an extremely long stinger, but that is not going to ever sting you and hurt you. What that is it's a modified what's called an ovipositor, which means that's the tube that's going to inject eggs into an insect. So the wasp kind of backs itself up, injects that ovipositor into the body of an insect, that its prey, and then injects its eggs into the inside of the insect, and then those eggs emerge and then eat that insect from the inside out. You see that a lot of times with aphids. So if you're not a fan of aphids, encourage those parasitic wasps, because those are going to go after aphids. And when you see an aphid that's like, it's inflated to the point where it looks like it's about ready to burst, that's a pretty good indicator that it's full of some type of beneficial insect egg, and most likely it will explode at some point.
Wow, this is fascinating to me. I think I want to try to find a slow motion close-up video of this process. I'm sure there's one out there.
Oh yeah, there is. There are videos online that you can search for, and there are quite a few native plants that you can plant in order to draw those beneficials into the garden, while at the same time drawing in, a lot of these beneficials are also pollinators. So they may transfer pollen from one plant to the next while they're hunting through the garden.
She is Erin Goss. She's from the Shaw Nature Reserve. She's been on the program before, and she's here today to answer your gardening questions at 314-436-7900. And we'll get to those phone calls starting in just a moment after a short break. It is the Garden Hotline on 104.1 KMOX. I'm Scott Jagow, along with Erin Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve. She's here to answer your gardening questions at 314-436-7900. We're going to go to the phones here in just a second, but I do want to let you know that next Saturday, the Garden Hotline will be broadcasting live from Chesterfield Valley Nursery from 8 to 10. Saturday morning, Michelle Reeser-West will be on site and hosting the show. So come out and say hello. Chesterfield Valley Nursery is located at 16825 North Outer 40 Road. Again, that's next Saturday from 8 to 10. Michelle Reeser-West on site at Chesterfield Valley Nursery. All right, let's go to the phones. 314-436-7900. Linda, you're up first with Erin. Good morning.
Hi, Erin. I just wanted to tell you that yesterday I went out to Shaw Nature Reserve and with a group from my garden club, Oakville Garden Club. We were looking for you, but a very nice young man was there who helped us. But it was just beautiful out there. It was pouring rain when we left. We always have a bad weather day. We tried to go last August, and it was 100 degrees. We canceled that, so we rescheduled. But it was beautiful, and we got to go into the house. And that was really enjoyable, that we walked a lot out there. But I do have a question. I had to dig out some daffodil bulbs that still have the greenery on the top, and because we're taking out a bush from that garden, so they were around it in front of it. I've got them just like in some dry potting soil. I put what should I do with them? Should I plant them back when I get that bush out of there, or should I leave them out? They're not hybridized. They're very old bulbs, I think, that I got from my mom's garden.
Yeah, well, first, thank you so much for visiting the nature reserve. And I'm sorry that it was so rainy. That really stinks when you were leaving. But
oh, no, the sun came out as soon as we got to the parking lot, and it was gorgeous. The sky cleared completely up. It was a beautiful day.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear. But as for your daffodil bulbs, if you've already dug them out, honestly, I'd actually just put them back in the ground. So they most likely will recover. Have they pushed all their leaves? Have they bloomed already?
Oh yeah, they were done, and the greenery is very tall. And I had fed them, like when they first started, like, you know, I gave them some food like early on. So yeah, I mean, they're the old type, you know, that come back every year.
Yeah.
And the bulbs are pretty small, like about the size, maybe a quarter, a half dollar. But the blooms are always beautiful. They're just the old type.
Yeah, I would put them back in the ground. Daffodils are pretty resilient, and those bulbs are going to hold a lot of energy. And so I'd once you're done digging out that shrub or whatever you're doing to that area, just go ahead and put those daffodils wherever you want. And be patient, and I bet they'll emerge and be just as beautiful next year.
And I kind of wanted to ask about the shrub was a holly that I think a bird planted, but it had been there for a long time, but it never did very well. And I noticed we were at the botanical garden Wednesday, and there were some there that were like that too, that the leaves were kind of off color and just kind of looked like spotted, almost like with fungus or something. I don't know what it was. But we have a holly out front that's beautiful, but I tried feeding it the holly tone and everything, but it just never came back. And what would be the problem with that? Do you know?
So sometimes those shrub hollies do struggle here. They don't necessarily like our soil. People just struggle with some of those shrub hollies. They really do need sun. They need plenty of sun. So if they're in a shady situation, they're going to be really spindly and decline rather quickly. So it might be that they weren't in enough sun. It might just be that those shrub hollies just aren't a very good choice for St. Louis. You might think about replacing it with something that's a little hardier here that is going to do better. And then depending on your conditions, I can give some recommendations unless you already have a shrub picked out.
Now, it's a really small garden, so I'm going to put the daffodils back in, and I think I'm just going to go in front with like zinnia seeds and like maybe some Missouri natives. So that's what I'm kind of planning on doing. But I recommend for everybody to come out to Shaw Nature Reserve. Everything wasn't blooming yet, but oh my gosh, the things that were blooming, we just walked around and just admired everything. And what's this? What's that? And we had plant identifier. We had a great time. So it's a beautiful place. We hope to see you next time there. Thank you for your help.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for calling in, Linda. The number is 314-436-7900 to ask your question of Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve. Up next, we have Mike. Good morning, Mike. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, I have about a 25-year-old flowering crab apple that most of the limbs on the north and west side have not leafed out at all. Mm. Is that tree done for?
Yeah, you know, a lot of our trees are still leafing out, but if you're finding that only half of it is leafing out, maybe give it a couple more weeks just to see if for some reason there's some delay going on. But that's a pretty good indicator that that portion of the tree has died back.
Okay.
Crab apples don't live for a very long time. They also do, unfortunately, have quite a few diseases that attack them. And so maybe hold off on doing anything again for maybe a couple more weeks just to make sure that there's not just some delay in that portion of the tree. With that said, if it still doesn't leaf out in a couple weeks, then unfortunately that section of that crab apple is probably dead.
It's seen its life, yeah. Okay, well, I appreciate your info. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. You have a wonderful day, Mike.
Thanks for calling in, Mike. We are at your service with the Garden Hotline. So let's continue with the phone calls at 314-436-7900. Up next, we have Robin. Good morning, Robin. You're on with Aaron.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. Aaron, I was at the Shaw Nature Reserve yesterday and hiked down to the river, and it's so pretty. There's so many dogwoods out. It was lovely. My question for you, I have a couple questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Super. Thank you. All right. So one thing is I have a Ace of Hearts red bud, and it hasn't leafed out at all yet. Mm. And it was fine last year. Should I think maybe it died, or do those just come up or leaf out strangely slowly?
You know, our red bud that we have in our backyard, which is probably 15 years old, it is just now starting to leaf out. So it's very possible that it's just a little delayed. So give it a couple weeks, just be patient and see if it'll leaf out. But if it doesn't leaf out by mid-May, then that's a problem. But hopefully it's going to be fine. You can do something called a scrape test. Where you take, do you know about the scrape test?
just scrape my fingernail on it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And just remove just a tiny bit of that outside bark, just a little bit. If it's green underneath, it's still alive. Or if those stems are still flexible and they don't break if you bend it, then that's still alive. But if it's brittle, then it's toast.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. All right. My other question is, I need to put a couple trees in because someone built a large building behind my house. Mm-hmm. And the two things that have been suggested to me are dwarf bald cypress that only get like 15 to 20 feet tall, and they're kind of columnar kind of shaped, which mm-hmm. would work. And the other one is a hornbeam, and I saw some columnars for that. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to do as much as with natives as I can. What are your feelings on what is the? I'm in Ellisville, so I'm kind of clayish soil. Yeah. So, what do you think would be the best choice?
Yeah. So So my advice is choose multiple tree species. And
okay.
then because that way if for whatever reason one of those tree species doesn't really like that area, or if something happens, then you don't lose all your screening. The cypress, if you've got moisture, then it'll be happy. It will over time develop something called pneumatic knees that usually pop up in turf. And so if you are mowing sometimes long term, those can be an issue because you end up with these woody structures that are out past the base of the plant. Hornbeams are great. We have a native hornbeam, and there's also the European hornbeam. A lot of the columnar hornbeams are going to be the European, but both the native and the European make great screening trees. You could also look at things like layering in a flowering dogwood in there. You could layer in another tree or like some viburnums in there too.
Mm-hmm.
Just check your soil moisture, and that bald cypress is pretty robust. I mean, it can tolerate drought, but it does like a little bit of water. But it's great for clay soil. Also, look at black gum.
Yeah, and the black gum's going to be too big for that area. I want 15 or 20 feet tall.
Okay. And then I would try those hornbeams and try that bald cypress. They also make a river birch that's like a cultivar that's really short. I don't remember if it's like Little King or Little River or River King, but it's something like that. They do make one that, again, is a short form, and that might also be a good choice for you.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling in, Robin. We appreciate you. 314-436-7900 is the number to reach Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve. We will continue with your questions just a moment on the Garden Hotline on KMOX. It is the Garden Hotline. Our guest today is Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve, answering your questions at 314-436-7900. Let's go back to the phones. Joan, you're up next. Good morning. Hello, Joan. You there? Nope. I guess we will go to Bunny. Bunny, you are on the Garden Hotline.
Aaron?
Yes.
Pardon?
Go ahead.
I want to find out about cutting peonies before they bloom totally in the house.
Oh, are you trying to bring the peony flowers in the house?
Yes, and I just recently heard that you can cut them before they bloom, bring them in the house, and they'll bloom. I'm trying to eliminate all the ants on them.
Yeah. Do you already have ants on the peony flower buds?
Not that I can say no.
Okay. They usually start going after those peonies once they are right before they're about ready to bloom. So if you can wait until those buds get, depending on the type of peony you have, wait until they're maybe about a week away from blooming and then take them in the house. And then you can.
Okay, and they will bloom in the water.
They will, but you've got to wait until they are just about ready to bloom if you cut them
too
early.
Okay, don't do it too soon.
Yeah,
okay,
don't
I understand.
Yeah.
Okay, Now, and is it too late to trim boxwood?
No, you can trim boxwoods. We are after our last frost date. So really the key in trimming boxwoods is it's tax day to Labor Day. That's when you want to, that's the period where trimming boxwoods is safe because you don't have to worry about it pushing new growth and then the new growth being killed off by a frost. So okay. Tax day to Labor Day is your window for pruning boxwoods.
Okay, great. And what about holly?
Hollies, you can also trim or prune hollies, same time period. Tax day to Labor Day is a really good time to prune any kind of evergreen.
Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling in, Bunny. 314-436-7900 is the number. Up next, we're going to go to Marcia. Good morning, Marcia.
Good morning. I have a question about my burning bushes. Mm-hmm. We have an abundance of rabbits living in our yard and house and everywhere. And they're not mine. They're just chose me. Mm-hmm. And they have eaten all the bark, all mm-hmm. of my burning bushes. And yeah. I think there's two of them close together, so it looks like one. And probably about a quarter of them have come back with the leaves. Is that going to come back? But when I snap the twigs, there's mm-hmm. still a little green on the inside, even though they don't look good.
Yeah, so unfortunately, rabbits, they do go after that bark. Sometimes it's to sharpen their teeth. If they just take a chunk out of one side of, like, say, the base of a plant, or the base of a shrub or a tree, then usually right. that tree can recover. However, if they work their teeth all the way around and they basically take a ring of bark around the base of that tree or shrub, like your burning bush, then mm-hmm. that's a natural way of girdling. It's called girdling a tree, and it can kill that tree or shrub because they've basically uh-huh. pulled off all the areas of that shrub that are pushing the nutrients to the top of the shrub. So check the base of your plants and see if they have removed that bark all the way around, then there may be an issue. If it's only on one side and it doesn't...
I think it's all the way around.
So just, I would hold a little bit. You know, again, be a little patient. Let the... Mm-hmm. It may be that the shrub just needs to recover from that trauma. Wait a few weeks, maybe a month. If it still doesn't push leaves, then you know you've got a problem.
Okay. Even though, so should I cut off all the bad parts of the bush?
If you notice that they're dead, that they're definitely dead, you can prune those out, most definitely.
Okay, because I was going to do that anyway. But if it's still a little bit green on the inside of the twigs and stems, it's okay?
It should still be alive. Now, okay. In 2 months' time, you could scrape that again, and then it might not be green.
Okay.
But just be a little patient and check it in like a couple weeks to a month.
Okay.
Again, if it's still not leafing out, then you're in trouble, or at least that shrub's in trouble.
Okay. Okay. Well, you kind of don't plant them in burning bushes till the fall anyway, so I'll wait about a month and a half and see how it goes. So, okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling in, Marcia. Let's try Joan. Good morning, Joan. You're on the Garden Hotline. Nope. I guess we have to give up on this call. Okay. All right. We're going to continue with the phone calls at 314-436-7900 for Erin Goss. She's from the Shaw Nature Reserve. We'll be back in just a minute.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry's starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
If you don't know about flyer deals on Instacart, this message is for you. Flyer deals are like strolling through your favorite store looking for deals. But you're scrolling your phone, and maybe you're in bed. Because getting delivery doesn't mean you have to miss deals like you'd get at the store. Like the one creamer that doesn't make your stomach hurt, or the pasta sauce you can't not buy when it's on sale. So download the Instacart app, shop flyers, and never miss a deal on one of your favorites. Plus, get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe, without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything, to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
And next Saturday, the Garden Hotline will be broadcasting live from Chesterfield Valley Nursery from 8 to 10 o'clock in the morning. Michelle Reeser-West will be on site and hosting the show, so come out and say hello. Chesterfield Valley Nursery, located at 16825 North Outer 40 Road. This morning, Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve is answering your gardening questions at 314-436-7900. And up next, we have Rose. Good morning, Rose.
Good morning.
What's your question this morning?
My question is, crepe myrtles and Rose of Sharon's, is now a good time to cut back or should I have done it in the fall?
Oh, no, no. Crepe myrtles, definitely want to wait until the spring. You want to, because especially if we've got a harsh winter, sometimes those crepe myrtles and also Rose of Sharon will die back. And so waiting until you start to see some of it, the crepe myrtle, especially a crepe myrtle, to start to leaf out, that's really the time to prune. So wait until it starts to leaf out a little bit. It may be another couple of weeks. Because we've had a warm spring, it may be now. If it's starting to leaf out, then go ahead and start pruning, because you want to look for the buds that are not breaking open. If those buds aren't there's no leaves emerging from those buds, then it's most likely died back a little bit. So let it leaf out and then prune it. And then that's true also for your Rose of Sharon.
Okay. Thank you so very much. That's wonderful.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling in, Rose. The number is 314-436-7900. That's the Garden Hotline. Aaron Goss answering your questions this morning. You talked a little bit earlier when we were off the air about privacy plantings. Can you go into that a little bit more?
Yeah. So just as the earlier caller, she called about, I think that was...
The trees.
Yeah. To block the building. So a lot of people create privacy lines, and that's great. We wanna create our little private oasis in our backyard or wherever. But a lot of people choose to just plant a single row of one species. So like a single row of just green giant arborvitae. And those green giant arborvitae are gorgeous, and they do the trick. But they have a tendency to just die, just like for no reason, or seems like no reason. And so you may have a row of 10 beautiful, you may have planted a row of 10 green giant arborvitae, and then you lose three of them, and now you've got to replant them. And so it looks really funny. And so people find that a lot of times they have to replace them. So I always advocate that people plant in layers. So instead of planting just a line of a single species, choose like 3 to 4 and vary your heights. And that, if you have multiple species in there, or multiple types of plants, that decreases the chance that they're going to be wiped out by one, like a pest, mm-hmm. or maybe there's some drought and one of the plants can't handle the drought, but you don't lose your entire privacy line. So I usually advocate, again, like you put in some, maybe a couple evergreens, you put in a few small deciduous understory trees, put in some larger shrubs, and then even maybe some grasses. And then you've got more of a layer, and you've got more more beauty and more potential blooms at different times of the year. And it's really great for wildlife when you layer for your privacy lines.
So diversifying.
Diversify, yes.
Your plantings if you're looking for a consistent privacy.
Yes, exactly.
Front there, because if you half of them die off or something, you lose it, the whole thing basically, because it's
exactly.
not much use.
You're diversifying your plant portfolio.
You also mentioned bulbs, taking care of bulbs. What did you want to say about that?
Yeah, so I love bulbs, and bulbs also are there are all there's another set of plants that are kind of related to bulbs, and those are our ephemerals. And ephemerals and bulbs both usually emerge before the leaves of trees leaf out. And so they have plenty of less intense sunlight in order to photosynthesize. But then also what they do is they emerge, they bloom, they leaf out, they bloom before the trees leaf out. So they're really great for early season pollinators. But one of the things that happens is as they are going dormant towards in May and in June, they look very unsightly. So their leaves yellow. So think about a tulip. Your tulips are up, beautiful, but then those big strappy leaves, they start to turn yellow. And so instead of cutting those leaves back, if you plan for that and plant later emerging plants around those bulbs or around those ephemerals, then those later emerging plants can cover the unsightly leaves from your bulbs. And because when you cut the foliage off of a bulb, even if it's starting to yellow, that bulb is, those leaves are still photosynthesizing. It's still pushing nutrients down into the bulb. And if you cut those leaves off too early, then you are depriving the bulbs of its nutrients that it needs in order to overwinter and then push new growth the following year. And so think about planting in layers. Mm-hmm. So have your bulbs, but then plant something next to it that's going to emerge a little bit later after the bulbs and cover that declining bulb foliage.
Interesting. You got to think 3D.
Yes.
When you're doing a garden.
3D, yeah.
I forgot to mention, this is the 100th anniversary of Shaw Nature Reserve, which is incredible.
Yeah.
And I remember when I went there for Roaming St. Louis, learning about the history of it and that the plants that were originally brought there were from the city.
Correct.
Because of all the pollution.
Yes.
And they were trying to save them, and that was the goal. Yes. And, of course, it has evolved into much more since then. But I'm sure you're happy to be involved with this this wonderful place in its 100th year.
Yeah, it's amazing that This institution has been around for 100 years. And if you do visit the nature reserve, you can see remnants of that, of the past of the nature reserve. There's a serpentine wall that was built in order to house the boxwood collection. Hmm. Now, as far as I know, there's no boxwoods out there, but that wall still exists. All those tulips are also left over. And then we also have other trees, not tulips, excuse me, all the daffodils that are out there, those are left over. And then we have a lot of tree species, a lot of specimen trees that are out there that are remnants from the nature reserve's past, from before it actually became a nature reserve.
And how many acres is it?
I want to say it's 2,900.
I was going to say 3,000.
It's about 2,900. And yeah. There's most of it is accessible to the public. There is a section of it that is across the Merrimack River, and there's no public access to that area. But most of the nature reserve is fully accessible to the public.
I know there's some events going on this year to celebrate the 100th, and one of those is the Wildflower Market, which is coming up very soon. After the top of the hour, we're going to talk a little bit about that. Great. And take your phone calls, your questions for Aaron Goss from Shaw Nature Reserve at 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline on 104.1 FM KMOX. It is the Garden Hotline for this April edition. Cloudy skies and rain throughout the weekend. Aaron Goss is here from the Shaw Nature Reserve to talk to us about your gardening questions. And the number to call is 314-436-7900. We started with that piece of music, great song by Tom Petty, because this is the 100th anniversary of the Shaw Nature Reserve. And coming up in just a couple of weeks is the Wildflower Market. So, Aaron, let's kick off with that. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so our Wildflower Market occurs on Friday, May 2nd from 3 to 7 p.m. and then also Saturday, May 3rd from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Friday night is really the Missouri Botanical Garden Members Night. And so if you're a member of the Botanical Garden, please stop by and visit us. On Saturday, that's the public event. It is free for members, but there is a small entry fee. It's $5 per person, or if you carpool, $10 per car. So you can pack a car full of people and get in for that reduced rate. We have a lot of different plant vendors that will be on hand selling native plants. We have Missouri Wildflowers Nursery, Ozark Soul Native Plant Nursery, Papillon, River City Natives, and then the St. Louis Chapter of Wild Ones also sells plants at the plant sale. And then Shaw Nature Reserve sells plants through a pre-sale. And that pre-sale, I believe, is still going on. Let me just check. Oh, nope, I'm sorry. I believe it has ended. But those pre-sale, those Shaw Nature Reserve pre-sales are available for pickup the day of the market. We're also going to have food and drinks and other artisans. Their wares available. We've got a basket maker who makes the most amazing baskets by hand. I bought a gathering basket from her, I believe, last year, and it is so beautiful. We have artists and coffee. We'll have wine and beer. We'll also have some food available. It's a really good time to bring your family out. Stop by the Wildflower Market and then also investigate the rest of the nature reserve. We do, though, ask that you leave your dogs at home. Mm-hmm. We do not allow dogs or any pets of any kind in the nature reserve.
Okay. Didn't know that. Good policy, I'm assuming.
Yeah, a lot of nature places, like conservation areas, they do that because any kind of interaction is going to have an impact on the landscape and the wildlife. So even the best well-behaved dog can unintentionally cause problems in a nature reserve.
The number to call to ask your question of Aaron is 314-436-7900. That's the Garden Hotline here on KMOX. As I mentioned, it's the 100th anniversary of the Shaw Nature Reserve. Aside from the Wildflower Market, do you know of any other events that are being planned the rest of the year?
Yes. So it's, we are so excited. We are bringing back our concert series. So it's a summer concert series. We'll have a concert. It's, I believe it's June, July, one concert in June, one concert in July, and one concert in August. And so we have local musicians who will set up on the what's called the Bascom Lawn. And that's the Bascom House, is the big historic home that's next to the Whitmer Wildflower Garden. There's a beautiful lawn with lots of oak trees to provide shade. You can set your chairs up on the lawn and then enjoy the music. And again, we'll have three different bands in June, July, and August. And then we also have a series of memory hikes. And so people who have worked at the nature reserve or even maybe grown up on the nature reserve will be leading hikes through different sections of the nature reserve, talking about what they remember and how maybe how things have changed. And then there's a series of talks throughout the St. Louis region on the history of the nature reserve at local libraries and other organizations. And then we also have a few other special events for members or for donors that will also occur throughout the year.
That sounds like a cool way to celebrate 100 years. And as I was saying earlier, what I found striking was the reason that the Shaw Nature Reserve started was to rescue plants in the city. You know, this was at a time in 1925 when there was so much pollution, coal pollution, and the streetlights would come on at 3 o'clock in the afternoon because it was so dark.
Yeah.
But that was the soot in the air. And of course, that's not good for plants. It was choking them to death. So they were trying to save them and created that. I guess it was some farmland mm-hmm. that was used out on 44 to create the Shaw Nature Reserve. But over time, it has developed into something much bigger. How would you describe what it does today, what it is today, besides a pretty place people can go visit?
Yeah, so we focus on ecological restoration. So restoring the land at the nature reserve. And when I say restoring, that's pretty generic. I think if you talk to our restoration folks, they wouldn't necessarily call it restoring because we can't go back to a land from the 1920s or 1800s. You just can't fully restore it. But we focus in on restoration, so learning how to manage prairies and woodlands. And then we also focus on native plant horticulture and education. So that's focusing in on a few areas of the reserve where it's more hands-on, where we are practicing gardening with native plants. So that, imagine around the visitor center. It's a designed and an intentionally managed space, and also the Whitmer Wildflower Garden. And then we also have an education division that works with a lot of school kids ranging from K through 12 to promote connection with nature. And so we have school programs where classrooms will visit the nature reserve, and they'll be paired with one of our teachers, and maybe they go on a hike. Maybe they're led in different nature activities. We also have the Dana Brown Overnight Center. The Dana Brown Overnight Center isn't visited very often by visitors, but it is an overnight center that can be rented. And a lot of school groups will visit and stay for maybe a week. And they will have nature-based activities throughout the week. And then they also
get
to... It's like camp, yeah. But it's not tent camping. There are actual cabins. They're mm-hmm. rustic and kind of dormitory style, but they are really, really cool cabins. Mm. And so for students who've never left the city or for students who aren't used to being in nature, it's a really great first experience because you're not in a tent surrounded by prairie or woods. You're in a building, in a bed, but you're surrounded by prairie or surrounded by woods. So it's a little safer environment.
I know another popular education aspect to the nature reserve is the photography classes.
Yes, absolutely.
I know those are popular.
Yeah. We have amazing photographers that will visit the nature reserve. And then we have classes that people can take to learn how to take nature photography. We also have we also have watercolor classes. So if people are interested in learning how to paint pictures of up close wildflowers or from a distance, like landscape style paintings in watercolor, we also offer those. We have yoga classes.
You have yoga classes. All right.
Classes. We have couples yoga even. Couples yoga is really interesting if you've never engaged in it. I highly recommend it at least once. Try it with your partner. And then we have individual yoga. We also have, again, hiking. We have last weekend, I believe, was the Spring Into Nature 10K run. So we have runs out there where we partner with like the Alpine Shop in order to promote trail running and running out in nature.
Lots going on at the Shaw Nature Reserve. Aaron Goss is here from there to answer your questions this morning. Whatever your gardening question is, as we're a month into spring already. 314-436-7900. That's the Garden Hotline. So call us here. We're going to take a short break and get back to your phone calls in just a moment. It's the Garden Hotline on 104.1 FM. Cam Wex, the voice of St. Louis. Aaron Goss is here from the Shaw Nature Reserve taking your questions at 314-436-7900. Let's begin with Tom. Good morning, Tom. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. Thank you very much. I was wanting some advice on getting some pawpaw trees started. I wonder if this is a good time or would fall be better. What I was intending on doing was getting a couple of 5 to 6 foot trees from a nursery north of St. Louis. For a start, I was wondering how much shade they would need to have. And then for the amount that I'd like to get established, like for our deer population and to enjoy some of the fruits myself, I was wondering how easy it would be to start smaller trees from seed. So I've researched a little bit online, but I'd really like to hear something from somebody that's really in the business rather than somebody that I don't know whose credentials, you know, I'm seeing online. So wish you could address that for me this morning, please.
Sure. Thank you so much, Tom, for your call. So yeah, pawpaws are wonderful. In nature, they generally occur as an understory tree. So keep that in mind. They can tolerate sun, but when they are sitting in a lot of sun, they usually need a little bit more moisture. With that said, if you are buying your trees from, if it's north of St. Louis, I'm going to take a guess that it might be Forest Keeling. They do right. offer some cultivars that are bred in order to be more productive and also tolerate a little bit more sun and grow in more of that orchard style setting. So you may be able to find one that has been bred again for a sunnier situation. In general, I say plant pawpaws in part shade and then they will be very happy. They do have a tendency to produce suckers, and so they do kind of form a little bit of a thicket if they are allowed to. So if you're planting them in like a mass together, you might have to prune some of those suckers back. Planting them this time of year is great. It's perfectly fine. However, planting them in the spring, do watch the water in this summer. So if we have a really, really, really hot summer, make sure you water those pawpaws well, because they will, while they're still developing their roots, like they're adjusting to their new home, they will need just a little bit more TLC, especially if we have a really hot summer and we have some drought. If you are wanting to grow them from seed, you definitely can do that. They do have a really, really hard outer coating, so you have to nick the seed, and then you do need to soak that seed. You boil, like, take some water, boil it, and then after it's done boiling, put the seed that you've nicked in the water and let it sit for overnight. It doesn't have to be, you don't want it boiling that whole time, but just you want that really hot water at first. Soak that seed overnight, and then you can plant it. A lot of times our native trees and shrubs, they do need the freeze-thaw cycle of winter. They need the cold, moist time of winter. So it may take it, if you do try to germinate the seed now, it may take a full year before it actually germinates. So just be patient with it.
All right. Okay. That sounds good.
Thanks for calling in, Tom. 314-436-7900 is the number. That's the Garden Hotline. Up next, we have Darren. Good morning, Darren. You are on with Aaron.
Hey, Aaron. Can you hear me?
I can. Go ahead, Darren.
Hey, I've got a Japanese maple in my backyard, about three or four years old. And the squirrels have started eating the bark on some of the limbs. And it hasn't done it before. First year I've noticed it. A couple of the smaller limbs that they've eaten just a little bit of the bark off of, it haven't leaked out, so I'm kind of distressed.
Yeah,
I was just curious if you had any suggestions. I trapped one of those squirrels, but I know they keep coming back, so I just was curious if you had any suggestions.
Yeah, unfortunately, those squirrels and rabbits, they do like to sharpen their teeth, and so sometimes they will take the bark off of, normally it's more of the base or the trunk of a tree, and that you can protect from. You can put like a barrier up, so they make little tree barriers. They're tubes that have a perforation in them that you can kind of pull them apart and just put them around the base. They also can be cut to size, so that's a way that you can protect the base of a tree. But if they're up in the limbs, that's a little trickier. And so what I would look for is if they have removed the bark from all the way around the base or all the way around that branch, then that branch most likely is going to die. But if it's just a little bit, just a little nick, then that branch most likely will recover. So just look for your Japanese maple. Japanese maples are notorious for a winter dieback anyway. So if you've got those branches that are really white, or they're kind of a beige color, or they're starting to their color just isn't very vibrant, that's an indicator that branch is dying anyway, so you can go ahead and prune those out.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Thanks for calling in, Darren. We appreciate you. Let's go next to Phil. You are on the Garden Hotline with Aaron Goss.
Thank you. And is it advantageous to put mulch around your garden plants, like tomatoes or cucumbers or anything else? I understand there's one type that keeps bugs or insects away.
No, mulch around vegetables is, in general, a really good thing, because most of those vegetables are definitely going to want a moister soil, and they're going to need weed suppression. They don't want competition. So mulching can be definitely your friend. With that said, there are different types of mulches. If you're wanting to inject within a season some nutrients into the soil, then go with leaf mulch. But it does break down very, very quickly. If you're wanting that mulch to hold for longer, then go with a bark mulch. You can even use chipped mulch if you want. But chipped mulch, those are really, really big chunks. Just make sure right around the base of the plant, you don't have mulch all the way up to the base of the plant. Give it a little bit, like an inch or two, around the base of the plant.
Okay. Yeah. This type that has supposed to be deters the insects or bugs, does that actually work like that?
I don't know about a mulch that deters bugs. It's possible that it's some sort of new product on the market. And honestly, I would be skeptical about that. Just because there are so many insects out there. The other thing is that if it deters insects in general, it's going to also deter the good insects.
Okay.
Not just the bad.
I was thinking about this mitrus. I mean, one mulch, I can't remember what it was, a cypress mulch would be good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cypress mulch, that kind of mulch is going to take a really, really long time to break down. So if you're using it to squash weeds and keep the moisture levels higher in your soil, it's a really great way to go. However, it takes a really long time for it to break down, so you're not going to get that added benefit of mulch breaking down and interjecting nutrients into the soil.
Okay, which kind would you use? Which one would you use?
personally, I really like leaf mulch.
Leaf
mulch does break down really quickly. So yeah. a secondary go-to would be just a double ground hardwood oak bark mulch.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling in, Phil. The number to call is 314-436-7900 to ask your question of Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve. And we'll continue with those questions in just a moment on 104.1 FM KMOX. The Garden Hotline with Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve, which is celebrating its 100th anniversary this year. And guess who else is? KMOX is 100 this year as well. 1925 Christmas Eve. All right, let's go to the phones. 314-436-7900. Up next, we have Casey. Good morning, Casey.
Hi, good morning. Hey, I have a weeping willow that has grown over the years and expanded to over my house. It's a two-story home. Anyway, I'm trying to find out, is there an ideal time of the year and ideal way of how to trim those branches back or limbs back to where I can cut it back away from the house? And also, I have one branch, a nice, maybe about 2-3 inch branch that is completely dead on there. When is the ideal time to do that and how to do that as well? And I hang up and listen.
All right. Thanks. Thank you, Casey, so much for your question. So the dead branch, that you can trim any time. So you can trim that now. You can trim that in 3 months, 6 months. Just whenever you're ready to trim that dead branch, go for it. A 2-3 inch branch, that's one that you probably could get away with on your own, but you will need someone to help you, depending on where it's located in the tree. Sometimes you can use a pole saw for that, which is basically a tree saw. It's a saw blade on the end of a really long pole, and then they also have it. It also has a little like pair of pruners on the end too, and those you can buy at like Home Depot or from.
Like, is it telescoping or no?
Some of them are telescoping, okay. And some of them are fixed. So you can find both. As far as pruning your willow. Generally, the rule of thumb is to prune them while they're dormant. With that said, willows are very forgiving. They will re-sprout fairly quickly. And so if you, as long as you're not taking a huge portion of that tree, you probably could go in and do it now. Just make sure you take, don't take more than a third of that tree or you could kill it. But again, willows are very forgiving. They will regrow really quickly. Some people will cut willows all the way to the ground. However, if you've got a massive weeping willow tree, don't cut that all the way to the ground because it may not resprout. But you can definitely go after that dead branch now. You can prune it now, those branches that you want to get rid of. Just don't take too terribly much off the tree. If you need to take a lot, wait till it's dormant.
Okay, thanks for calling in, Casey. Let's go next to Jim. Jim, you're on the Garden Hotline with Aaron.
Yes, I've got a blue atlas cedar. It's probably 20 years old, about 20 foot high. It's been in decline a little bit for the last 2 years. I noticed some little peck marks in the, it's very center of the tree in the middle. Its limbs are dying directly all the way back to the main trunk. They got like a woodpecker had pecked at it. I don't know if I need to spray insecticide or fungicide or something to stop whatever's pecking or if there's borers in that tree. I appreciate the advice. Thank you.
Yeah, Jim, I'm so sorry to hear about your blue atlas cedar. I was about ready to say I'm extremely jealous that you have a 20-year-old blue atlas cedar because Steve and I lost ours about 3 years ago. Maybe it was 2 years ago. We had that really, really hard early frost in the fall, and we hadn't had any rain. And so we saw ours decline over that winter. So it's very possible that your atlas cedar, your blue atlas cedar, was also affected by that early frost and that really dry time from a couple falls ago. It's all, if you've got woodpecker damage, that's a good indicator that you've definitely got some borers or some insects in the trunk of that tree. So your choices are you can treat that tree if you'd like, but it's very possible that tree is on the way out. So I would go out with like a knife or some pruners, a sharper knife or some pruners, and take a branch that still has some growth on it, some of the needles, and scrape that branch a little bit and see what the inside looks like. Just take a little bit of that bark off. See if it still has color to it. See if you see any kind of splotching. Because if you see any kind of splotching in that, in the interior tissues, then you might also have a fungal infection. So anytime a tree is stressed, that's when usually it becomes more susceptible to disease and also pests. So it could be a variety of things, but I suspect that it might be on its way out. If you're seeing that die back all the way to the trunk, that's a really bad sign.
Okay, well, not good news, but I appreciate the advice. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling in, Jim. We have another Jim on the line. Good morning. You are on the Garden Hotline with Aaron.
Good morning. I have thousands of small honeysuckle seedlings in my lawn, thanks to the hedge along the side of the yard and probably a big gust of wind at the wrong time. And I'm wondering, other than hand-picking every one of those out of the yard, do you have any suggestions?
Oh, that's a toughie, because basically you can mow that, and it might, well... So a lot of times with honeysuckle, even if you pop its little head off, it'll keep growing underground. However, eventually, those roots will be depleted. So you might be able to just mow your lawn, but mow it more frequently and see if that doesn't help with keeping them in check. You could use some herbicide. There are daubers that you can buy that... They're herbicide daubers. They look a lot like an elongated bingo dauber. You've ever seen one of those. But you can find them in their long tubes. They're like 2 or 3 foot long. You fill the interior with your herbicide, and most people will use some sort of blue dye mixed in with that herbicide so you can see what you're doing. But make sure you get like a foliar version of that, and you can go around with that dauber and just kind of bear and touch the leaves of the honeysuckle, but you do have to go around and touch each and every one of those honeysuckle each and every one of the honeysuckles. But that might be a faster way to go after them without hand pulling.
Okay. Any other ideas?
So herbicide, hand pulling, again, mowing them off where you're basically... depriving the roots of nutrients because the honeysuckle can't photosynthesize. Those are the approaches that I would encourage if you want to keep your lawn in place. I mean, there are other ways that you could go after that honeysuckle, but in my mind, that would probably kill your lawn too. And I'm assuming you want to keep your lawn.
Okay. I will try a couple of those options. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thanks for calling in. Let's go next to Kay. Kay, good morning. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. I have a question about plants that are growing in my yard that I don't really want. And somebody told me they are like marshmallow or something like that. And they spread like crazy. I know when it gets warm, they die back. But they seem to be a lot more... everywhere this year than they have been in the past. I've been told I have to dig them up, but not even if I dig them up, there's going to be little pebbly things left, and I just don't know what else to do.
Okay. Yes, I think what you're talking about, do they have yellow flowers?
They do.
Yes, those are a bear to get out. They do have little bulblets in the soil that help them survive drought. And so they almost always emerge in the spring. They take on all that water, and then they grow exponentially when we have really wet springs, and then they go dormant in the summer. There are some herbicides that you can use. And so I would say if your lawn is over 50% those little buttercups, then you might have to just start over. You might have to treat the whole lawn or use like solarization, use some plastic, or you could sheet mulch. You could put mulch, cardboard down and then lay mulch on top. But if you've got them all over your lawn, that's going to be a really tricky thing to try to remove them.
Right.
Do you work with a turf company?
No, I don't. No. And I've been told that Roundup really doesn't kill them either, I don't know what else to do.
You have to apply it a lot, over a long period of time, because they have those little bulbs underground. So you might, again, your best bet is honestly probably to start over and try to solarize that lawn and then relay sod. So you could do that. Again, you can try the herbicide application using that long-handled dauber that I talked about with Jim's thousands of honeysuckle seedlings, but that will take several months and several rounds of applications.
Right.
Otherwise, you can live with them because they do go away in the summertime.
Right.
You know, you would only have them around in the spring, but they are really tough to get out of the lawn. And I don't have the best news for you, Kay, and that really stinks.
That might happen, right? All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the call, Kay. All right. One more round left. 314-436-7900. We have some slots available for the last segment to get your question in for Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve. Stay tuned. It's the Garden Hotline on 104.1.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Since the dawn of Major League Baseball, every player has honed their unique skills.
Judge, drill deep to left.
Otani connects and it's gone.
Skeen strikes out the side.
Bobby Witt Jr. throws in time.
Harper does it again.
Witness the hills of the game in ballparks nationwide. Get your tickets today at MLB.com/tickets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
FM KMOX. And your next Saturday, the Garden Hotline will be broadcasting live from Chesterfield Valley Nursery from 8 to 10. Michelle Reeser-West will be on site and hosting the show, so come out and say hello. Chesterfield Valley Nursery, located at 16825 North Outer 40 Road. Let's get back to the phones. Paul, you're up next with Aaron Goss. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm very fortunate. I've just moved into a house. The previous owner was an unbelievable green thumb, and I am not. And I was wondering I'd like to get somebody to come out and look at my property and tell me what everything is and what I should do to keep it looking good. And then the second question was, I think they're red buds growing up, and they've got white plastic tubes around them to keep we've got a ton of deer. Yep. And I'm assuming that's to keep them away. I'm wondering, how long do I keep those white plastic tubes on?
Yes, so those tubes most likely are there to protect from deer rub particularly, or also sometimes from squirrels or rabbits from eating the bark. So check your tubes. If they're like the corrugated tubes, or they have in between. Do they have a
split? Yes, they're white, but they're not corrugated.
Okay, so those, if they have a split, a lot of times that will allow some growth of the tree trunk. So as long as there's that split in between, that tree trunk can grow out, and those tubes are not going to restrict the growth. With that said, there will come a time when you do need to remove those tubes. And the good indicator is if you see that that split in between the tubes, if it's like an inch or more, definitely take those tubes off. You may have to protect the trees in a different way. As far as who to call, I mean, there are a lot of different firms out there that you could talk to. If you have a mostly native garden, then I would check out grownative.org. They have a resource guide online that has lists of both design firms and maintenance firms that can help you assess the garden. If you have a non-native garden, then there are lots of firms out there that can help you. You can contact any of them and then ask to have a consultation, and someone can come out and walk with you.
Thanks for calling in, Paul. Up next, we have Rick. Good morning, Rick. What's your question?
Hey, good morning. I have two Japanese maple trees that died last year due to various circumstances. And when I was going to dig them up, I found that they seemed to have a very strong root system. And I was wondering what you suggest for, you know, that type of stump removal. I've read things about, you know, drilling holes and using kerosene and things like that. Does that make sense? Because, you know, the digging for this seems to be much more than I was expecting.
Yeah, I have seen people use kerosene, and they will basically burn the stump out. So drill holes, put the liquid in there, and then burn it. You can go that route. You can also rent a stump grinder, or you can hire a stump grinder to grind that out. Some people just leave the stumps in the ground and let them decompose naturally. But there are lots of different techniques you can use. You can also buy a product that will, it's kind of like an acid that will eat away at the wood. But yeah, try that kerosene approach. Just make sure to not do that on a really windy day, and clear out all potential flammable debris from around that tree.
All right, let's go to Mark. Mark, you're up next with Aaron. Good morning.
Good morning. Aaron, I have a question about I think it's a broadleaf thing that's kind of invasive on my lawn. It's just in various patches. I don't know what it's called, but it's low to the ground, really dark leaves that are maybe as big as round as a half dollar, and it seems like it flowers purple things, a little purple flowers in the springtime. And I've tried weed and feed for 3 years, and nothing seems to touch this. I was wondering if you could give me some advice.
Yeah, so if you pluck one of the plants, does it have a smell to it, like a very distinctive smell?
Yeah, I've never done that, but you know, I'm assuming it does, because sometimes there is a fragrance in that area.
Okay, and then is it spreading like a ground cover?
Right.
So that's probably Creeping Charlie, and Creeping Charlie, it's another tough one. Now, the nice thing about Creeping Charlie is that its root system is not robust. It's a pretty shallow root system. So maybe on like Tuesday of this coming week, if you go out, you can start pulling up those vines from the pretty easily. So after it's rained and then it dries out a little bit, go out there and you can start pulling on the vines. There are some chemical products out there that will work, but I don't know that like straight up Roundup does a very good job. If you do use it, you have to apply it a lot in order to get it to work. So honestly, I use the manual removal method. If you have a lot of it, that can be tricky. But what we're doing is we are just slowly taking it section by section and just pulling out a section of that Creeping Charlie and then replacing it with other plants. So that would be the avenue I would go. It's a slow roll, but it's pretty effective, and we'll stop that Creeping Charlie eventually.
Good question. Thanks for all the questions this morning for Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve. That's all we have time for. You can reach us next week when we'll be live at the Chesterfield Valley Nursery from 8 to 10. Michelle Reeser-West will be on site and hosting the show. Aaron, thanks for being in again. Enjoyed it. And the wildflower market is when again?
That is May 2nd and May 3rd. For more information, check out snrshop.org.